Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Today's episode of the Chase Thomas Podcast is presented by maybe you. Yeah, you. I'm looking at you. If you're a small business owner, you're a big business owner. If you are someone who knows of a business owner that is looking to get into the podcast sponsorship game, please reach out to the Chase Thomas Podcast at chasethomaspodcast@gmail.com as we are looking for a new presenting sponsor of the show. What are you getting on this show? Well, you're getting 7 days a week of content. Monday through Friday, you're getting NFL stuff, you're getting NBA stuff, you're getting college football stuff, you are getting pro wrestling stuff, you are getting interviews with former MLB Hall of Famers, you're getting interviews with Writers of the Week and the New York Times and authors and former NFL GMs, NBA players. It's just all over the place. You're getting all this content Monday through Saturday. On Sundays, you're getting some film reviews with Musay and Thomas. You're getting written content Monday through Sunday. Oh, yeah. You're getting NBA stuff from me. You're getting college football writing. You're getting NFL picks. You're getting a Friday Nobody Asked mailbag. You're getting my newsletter. On Saturdays, you're getting pro wrestling recasts from Raw, SmackDown, AEW Dynamite, Impact Wrestling. I'm covering it all. I'm writing about TV. I'm writing about movies. I'm writing about whatever I possibly can because I love to write and I love to do this podcast. So this is a very long intro, but I love what I do, and I'm going to keep doing this. I'm going to keep churning out content every single day. Over 500 episodes to date of the Chase Thomas Podcast. Please go check it out and more at chasethomaspodcast.com. Subscribe on Apple and or Spotify or wherever else you get your podcast. I'd greatly appreciate it. If you're an Apple listener, leave us 5 stars and a rating. It helps more than you know. Also, I think that's the big stuff is... Just go check out all that great stuff on chasethomaspodcast.com/page11 and follow me on Twitter at chase_thomas. Like the Facebook page at facebook.com/chasethomaswriter. And yeah, all right, Uncle Darren, let's go.
Chase Thomas Podcast, the Chase Thomas Podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, hello and welcome to a Friday afternoon edition of America's favorite sports writers. I'm joined, per usual, up there in the Northeast from the Daily Beast. Did not mean to rhyme there. Bob Silverman. Bob, good afternoon. How are you?
Afternoon, Chase.
Bob is excited to be back on the Chase Thomas podcast. With,
I'm ready to roll.
He's ready to roll, as the kids say. Up there in the Northwest of the Tacoma News Tribune, Andrew Hammond, who also now has a podcast. Andrew, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you guys doing?
Good, good. How is the podcast going, sir?
Good. Into the Archives with Aham. Cheap plug right there. Doing well. We start part one of the part five BCS miniseries that we are doing. And episode three of the podcast comes out on Monday.
All right. Look out for that. We have a lot of stuff to get into today. There is a lot of sports happening right now. There's a lot of push-ups happening inside Washington, D.C., getting swole for RGB. You love to see it, folks. The first thing I want to touch on first, though, Major League Baseball. There's been a lot of conversations about whether or not the sport is dying, whether or not the sport is in real trouble. And I think this offseason, I don't think fans are all that aware of just this kind of nuclear labor war that we're about to get into, because the CBA is up and it's going to get ugly. We just move so fast in the news cycle that we just forget that the players were openly just like, we don't trust the owners. And Jeter admitted that the players don't trust the owners. And it's going to be a bloodbath. And I wouldn't actually be surprised if it's a strike riddled season next year. With all that being said, Major League Baseball locked in a new deal with Turner that got them a huge raise, and baseball is probably fine, and I think sports might still be fine, but the deal is worth $3.7 billion with Turner for 7 years. Bob, when you saw this, what was your first thought?
Baseball's back, baby!
Yeah!
America's pastime. First of all, I just want to say, like, extending with Turner, a network that seems to, let's just say, I don't think Turner has had some of the most innovative ideas about how to package baseball and present it as an entertainment product. So that to me wasn't like, not that I trust any cable or broadcast network to do a better job, but Turner just, they throw so many freaking bells and whistles at the wall. And like, the pregame show is such a jock chuckle fest. It's fine. I think what we've learned is, you know, cord cutting notwithstanding, there has been so much talk, and talk I do not care about sports TV ratings.
Yeah.
As both a fan of sports and a person who often writes about sports, oh boy, could I not care less about TV ratings.
Oh man, you could not be a wrestling fan in 2020, Bob. That is all wrestling fans talk about.
I watched the Andre the Giant 30 for 30 for finally last night, or the HBO Real Sports Andre. I forget who. Maybe they made it together. In any case, I watched a short Andre the Giant documentary last night because Andre the Giant is cool. But holy crap, I don't care. I don't care. I don't care if fewer people are watching the NBA. I don't care if more people are watching the NBA. I don't care if fewer people watch the NFL Monday night broadcast on week two this year versus last year. Even if you could, you know, atomize that data and parse out some kind of meaning about what that might say about the political beliefs of Americans, or even just the viewing habits of Americans, I don't care. If NBA salaries go down, I don't care. I care about management screwing over labor and using declining TV ratings as a cudgel to extract concessions. That I care about. But I really don't care how much people are watching this game. And I don't know why anyone else would either. It baffles me. It's this weird thing of, like, it seems to me that there's a percentage of the population that will hold up ratings again for the NFL and suddenly scream, see, this is proof that this is the real American sport, or something else, or turn it into some, you know, culture war cudgel that can be used against an imagined other side, when I just don't know who cares about this aside from the people who are paid because of it.
Yeah, why do people in care about case. America's sport? Why do they care about who is, like, people get really up in arms when they're, when if you say America's past favorite pastime or whatever, that they get very insecure about that. I've never
it's
understood
fucking football.
This.
It's been football for 30 years. It's fine. It's really fine.
Yeah.
More people watch football. What football did, which is very smart, and I don't think necessarily speaks to the quality of the product that they're presenting, is unlike baseball, basketball, hockey, or even really wrestling. Wrestling somewhat, but wrestling has never been a contender. Sorry about that, man. There is an exact time when everyone knows the football will be on. The football games are at 1 and 4 p.m. on the East Coast, and the night game is at 8 p.m. on Sunday night, and then there's the Monday night game. And then they threw in the Thursday night game, too. But everybody knows that that's when the game will be on. And they gave them relatively few choices about which game they could watch. That is what creates interest, is scheduled programming. That is why people, that has played a huge role, in my opinion, about why NFL ratings have skyrocketed so.
I think it's also why baseball is regional, right? Is that the only games that people know are their team's games. Like, Braves fans know when the Braves play. They don't know when the Reds play.
There is no major league, like the Major League Baseball game of the week was a thing that existed and drew in lots and lots of viewers. And they would just play a game on a TV network, a free TV network that was picked by the networks of Major League Baseball. And it was the popular and cool teams. And that was a show that people watched. Now, look, Major League Baseball broadcasts are regional, but clearly, like, look, there will always be a value in live sports because it is the only entertainment product that whose value is dependent on watching it in real time. So of course, Tia Turner paid for it. Even in a market filled with increased cord cutting and diminishing returns and the diminished slice of the audience, you cannot TiVo a Major League Baseball game or an NFL game and really get much pleasure from watching it, I don't think. Not especially now when, you know, look, I want to watch, say, how Kristaps Porzingis did the other night with the Mavericks. Freaking Dawkins will have a 10-minute mix of his highlights up on YouTube. I have no idea how he does it. 15 minutes after the game is over. Like, okay, great. Now I know how Kristaps did, and I'm fine. I can get on with my life.
Andrew, what
but
do you think?
I just think, look, it proves very little other than there's value in live sports as an entertainment commodity.
And it also just speaks that nothing really matters. Like, Manfred's done an objectively terrible job since taking over. Like, he's just really fucking bad at his job. And he just got a gigantic raise. Like, this is a 65% increase from the previous contract between these two parties. Like, this isn't... He's doing a bad job. And these owners, I wonder, and these commissioners, they just look at it and they're like, this speaks to your point of just live sports is just still so valuable that it doesn't matter. Everything just doesn't matter. They're going to get a raise.
It doesn't matter. You can get really fetishistic about length of games. He can install all of these ridiculous rules during the COVID season. Doesn't matter. The core nature of the product, which is someone has to sit there, and even if they mute it or walk away, the commercials are still playing and you can't fast forward. That is a massively profitable thing that is almost unscrew-upable. Is that a word? No, but my point stands.
Andrew, what do you think?
All right, so I will disagree with Bob on one point. I know.
Stop the monocle there, man.
I'm not like the biggest fan of ratings because I think ratings people will take ratings numbers and they'll say, oh, well, th- th- this is why this is happening. This is why that's happening. I think for people who want to skew their argument politically, I think that's bullshit. The one thing I like when looking at ratings is how different time slots or how different teams do in different time slots, how things carry over in terms of the year-to-year trend. Say, for example, Sunday Night Football. You know, for the longest, you had the Cowboys and Giants opening up at either MetLife or at Jerry World every Sunday night for like 3 or 4 years straight. And you're just like, okay, guys, this is stupid. This is annoying. So, like, we all kind of braced ourselves for it. And so, say you're looking at the numbers, say the Giants are coming off a Super Bowl and, you know, week two, they got to go to Dallas. So you can see the week two number from the year before and look at the one, you know, that is most current. So some of that stuff is fascinating just to see, you know, what the trends are looking like for America in terms of, oh, is the audience kind of turned off by, say, the Patriots, or are they kind of annoyed, you know, with, you know, pick whoever team and whatever sport. So some of that stuff is kind of interesting sometimes. The only thing that frustrates me about it is when people turn it to political arguments saying, well, you know, people are kneeling for the flag. I'm not going to watch. It's like, buddy, the perfect example of how NFL fans will watch anything, and when they say, well, I'm not going to watch, that's bullshit. Look at Jacksonville and Miami last night. There's absolutely nothing on TV across the board. I guarantee you, I haven't seen the number yet, but I guarantee you in at least two or three of those time slots that NFL coverage was top three. And this further, you know, this further validates my point that the NFL could put on a random game in March. They could put on a random NFL game on a random spring night, and I guarantee you, you could throw it up against anything on TV. It will be the number one show that night. I mean,
just to buttress Andrew's point about politics, like, by definition, there are a panoply of different things that the NFL expresses a political ideology that I find deeply, deeply objectionable. Like, just labor law, public funding of stadiums, the violence bestowed upon athletes, the cheap jingoism that has been a part of the NFL for years. Like, there's just a massive number of things that the NFL does that I find politically objectionable, even before you get to the flag that's somehow 100 yards long. And boy, do I not fucking care, and do I watch every week. I mean, I care. It makes me think, I disagree with that. That sucks. I'm going to watch the Jets-Colts game this weekend, for fuck's sake.
And Bob, here's the thing that kills me. And then I kind of want to get to my second point real quick, is that people who will go out of their way and say, oh, I'm not going to watch the NFL, they're protesting, or they've gone too political. I just want to be like, you watch the Olympics, right? Yeah. You watch any type of international competition, right? Yeah. You know, it's all basically kind of like a political we're better than you thing, right? So you should probably just not watch sports. But Bob made a great point about having games on free TV. I am, and I don't know if this makes me a dinosaur or whatever, but for me, the way programming is and the way TV is now, it is basically begging for networks to put baseball, basketball, whatever, on free TV during weeknights. Like, it is begging for that, because essentially during the summer, and baseball's not what it used to be, because, you know, you used to have Monday Night Baseball back in the day. Mm-hmm. You can't – I mean, I think you can get away with it in some instances, but if you had a game on Fox every single week, I think that would definitely help. And I know with the new TBS deal or new Turner deal, they're going to have Tuesday Night Baseball on TBS, which is cool because I grew up watching the Braves on TBS. So it's a throwback to that. But at the same time, if it's the summer and you get a – can't believe I'm actually going to advocate for this – a Yankees-Red Sox game on either Fox or NBC, what have you, and ABC is showing me a replay of Dancing with the Stars and everybody else is showing me reruns and CBS is showing me some type of boomer cop show, yeah, I'm going to watch baseball because – It's live. It's, you know, something
The larger problem that baseball has is nothing to do with TV. Like, and this ties into this question. People are like, you paid how many dollars to broadcast the sport? Is, I think it was about a year ago, there was a poll asking fans to name the most famous baseball player they'd heard of.
Mm.
And the number one response was Derek Jeter, who'd been retired for 5 years. And the number two response was Tim Tebow.
What?
I believe it.
That's not surprising, I guess, yeah.
Well, the shout out to Rob Manfred for absolutely doing the fantastic effort of being hired to be a commissioner of a sport that, judging by his moves, he openly hates. Like this, yeah. I've never seen a person hate a sport as much like Rob Manfred does, and it's
maybe Gary Bettman, but it's a different kind of hate.
And the thing with Gary Bettman is we've kind of realized, oh, that's just Gary. And
yeah.
It took a pandemic for us to actually appreciate how decent Gary Bettman does in a crunch. Like the NHL, you'd figure the NHL is going to find a way to screw it up at every turn. But the one thing that they've done, one excellent thing they've done, is they've kept everybody in the bubble. You know, like you haven't had any bubble issues. Huh?
Move to Canada.
Right. It was, okay, we're just going to get out of everybody's way, do our own thing. Everything comes off without a hitch. But, you know, the issue for them now is how do you start a season, which I think everybody's going to have that issue. But, yeah, like Gary Bettman has done his basically just put his head down, done his job, and we're like, oh, this is good for you, Gary. Good for you.
Yeah. Did y'all see who is the highest selling baseball jersey this year?
Mookie Betts, right?
Yeah, Mookie's number one. Would you like to guess where Mike Trout fell in that top 10?
I'm going to guess 6.
0. He is not in the top 10 in jersey sales.
So wait, hold on. I need a TV timeout here. You're telling me that arguably the greatest five-tool player, maybe since Mickey Mantle, is not even a top 10 selling jersey?
That is correct.
Nobody knows who he is.
Nobody knows who he is.
I'm not disagreeing. Don't get hot with me, Bob.
the dude's hobby is the weather.
Yeah.
He's not the most compelling athlete of our time.
Well, you know what the funny thing about it is, like, yeah, Mike Trout is the type of guy that's like, you know, he goes and he does his job. Nothing wrong with that.
Lunch pail kind of guy.
Right. Well, and the thing that Major League Baseball is like, well, let's just Mike be Mike. And I'm like, y'all understand that literally this man, by the time he is retired, he could be perhaps the greatest player in Major League Baseball history. And you are treating him like a second tier NASCAR driver.
Mm. Oh, you know what, though? Is Bubba Wallace more popular and more known than Mike Trout?
Yes.
The answer is
absolutely.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. Absolutely.
Yes, without question.
Yeah. Interesting stuff. And people don't watch NASCAR. That's the other thing. When I see all these people who are like, with Jordan getting involved, watching everything, I'm like, are you? Are you going to watch? Are you going to get into NASCAR at 32 years old?
Chase, I will advocate for one point for NASCAR.
Mm.
if they get rid of the stages, you will bring people back to. If you get rid of the stages and you actually make the stages are. Fun,
I've never watched a NASCAR event. I've been to Atlanta Motor Speedway one time. It was a horrible experience. Horrible.
That's the one thing for NASCAR. You need fun tracks. You need interesting tracks, and you need to get rid of stages because literally, I can sit there and pop in. Oh, there's three laps to go in one stage, or three laps to go in the other. Yeah. Okay. Cool. Fine. I just nap during everything else.
Mm. Thing with baseball,
put a bow on this, Bob.
The least surprising thing that's come out of the bubble is like Manfred saying they're going to keep the 16-team playoffs intact, which of course they are, because it allows the owners to put out really shitty teams and not spend money and yet say, look, we made the playoffs. And more playoffs equals more broadcast TV games, equals more TV
revenue,
money.
Gate revenue.
More playoff revenue, more TV revenue, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Nobody wants a 16. No fans of baseball want this. None. I mean, maybe that's anecdotal evidence based on what I see on the old Twitter timeline and yakking it, you know, when I'm mixing it up in the group chat with the boys. But nobody wants this. Nobody wants this. It is purely profit driven. It takes the 162 game Major League Baseball season, which already, even at baseball's peak, had something called the dog days because players didn't want to play and no one was watching in August. And now it renders it almost completely meaningless. It is a short-sighted smash and grab money play, and it is going to be bad for baseball.
Real quick, hey Bob, I want to tack on one point for you. If I were commissioner, I would go back to the old school four teams in each.
Yeah,
like because I'm sorry, I am the biggest advocate for shrink the playoffs, make the divisions and make those matter again because. The thing about it is, like, I can look at a random November game between the Eagles and Redskins, and if they're, you know, 2-3 in the NFC East, yeah, it's kind of important.
It's scarcity. There are only 16 games. Every game matters if you want to have a winning season.
But with the expansion of the NFL playoffs, now it's just like, oh, okay, well, whoever loses, they're in trouble for a few weeks or permanently. And you're like, this is stupid. Why are we just bashing into each other more than usual?
This has been talked about with the NBA for a long time. I am very much of the belief that the NBA season shouldn't be more than like maybe 66 games long, probably. 60.
You're probably gonna get your wish next year.
Well, that's going to happen as a matter of course anyway. But like I have said, it's not my idea even. Other smart people have said this too. If the NBA is really concerned about shedding viewers, I would have it be 60 games. I would have most of the games be in your division. And I would have them only on Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday nights and one Sunday day of game of the week. And those are the days that everybody plays on. Or, you know, a team will play like three out of the four nights, every team in the league. That eliminates all back-to-backs with travel, which grinds the players down to dust. And if everyone knows that Tuesday night at 7:30 is when the NBA game is on, more people will watch it.
And they're not going to do that.
They're not going to do that.
It makes too much sense. That's why.
It's short-sighted. It's because you just cost me a quarter of my gate revenue and my TV revenue. And I'm like, yes, but I have a feeling more people will show up to each individual game and more people will watch each individual game. than if you have all 82. But you cannot convince. The problem is that, like, and this gets back to basic economics, like so many of the ownership groups in the NBA right now, the reason they are buying these entities is because of the ability to sell them off at a huge marked up profit. I think I read this somewhere and I could be wrong, but I think most of the recently financed NBA purchases were done so with massive debt. And that debt requires collateral. Like, you have to service that debt as an NBA owner. And people talk about whether the NBA makes money and owners don't make money. There are legitimate obligations that have to do because teams are bought with collateralized debt service. Because, you know, when we're talking sports here on the pod, that's what everyone wants to hear about. What I'm saying is, like, the leveraged nature of these ownership groups is such that in their defense, they can't really take major losses in revenue, but by constructing a more logical season plan. And again, I believe if I'm wrong, you know, hit me up in the comments. Or my DMs are open. Let me know if I'm wrong about my very, very, very rudimentary knowledge of big business. But, like, you know, it's like it's a mess. Look, the Wilpons did literally everything wrong for more than 20 years. And they went from being owned by a team, owned by an ownership group that was the victims of a financial crime, to someone who perpetrated financial crime. And the
victim, that's what we call a paradox.
The suckers of the financial crime came away with a massive profit windfall. Meanwhile, now they're trying to sell off their regional, the team-owned regional TV network, SNY. The value of SNY is set at $1 billion. Now, having your own regional TV network in the New York City market is incredibly is like a license to print money. But it isn't for the Wilpons, because every single year the Wilpons borrowed against SNY's future earnings in order to keep the team afloat because they got ripped off by Bernie Madoff. So the actual value of SNY is $150 million in actual revenue generating and somewhere around $850 million in debt payments.
Yikes.
That's how screwed up the economics of Major League Baseball.
Well,
I can't wait.
I got mad about the Mets. Sorry about that. Mad about the Mets.
Well, this naturally leads us to something that we would not get mad at all. I don't think we're going to get mad at this at all.
I think it's funny, really.
I think it's funny. I'm not mad.
I'm not mad.
Jason Whitlock.
Okay, you need. Yeah, now I'm mad.
Go for it, Andrew. I just yakked for like 20 minutes.
I
bite at the apple.
Oh, God. Go ahead, Chase. Go ahead. Go ahead.
No. You. This is all you right now. I am going to get out of the way for you and Bob here. This is okay, y'all's wheelhouse. Yeah.
Here's my thing with Jason Whitlock. This comes from a kid whose parents and my dad, huge Chiefs fan, would get the Sunday Kansas City Star. And you'd see Whitlock's column in there. And, you know, once you get the internet, you want to read Jason Whitlock. Jason Whitlock was he was controversial, but he also made you think. And you may have not agreed with him, but you're like, okay, that's an interesting point of view. Here's the thing about Jason Whitlock. Jason Whitlock realized that he has an audience and he had a majority black audience for a while. Then all of a sudden he got too, and this is no pun intended, he got too big for his britches and he started burning bridges. He has a Keith Olbermann type A personality. Where, but the thing with Keith is, Keith can walk into any room and he can hide that type A personality for as long as he can until it just comes out. The issue for Whitlock is he throws the personality out there first, and then you got to deal with everything that comes with it. Where Whitlock lost a lot of people was he was going to be the editor of The Undefeated. Once ESPN launched The Undefeated, he was going to bring in all of these writers, and you're thinking, oh man, like this is because The Undefeated was going to take over Page Two. And so you're thinking to yourself, holy shit, like this is, I mean, you had people who are now at The Ringer and all these other sites, and you're like, wow, like this is it's a diverse set of people. It's people you want to read. Like people, like half of them are at The Ringer. The other half is at The Athletic. Like this was going to be a great vertical. And then you don't hear anything from it for like 3, 4, 5 months. Whitlock basically was like, oh yeah, no, it's going to launch. It's going to launch. And then after a while, ESPN is just like, no, we're going to, like, all of a sudden they get rid of Whitlock. He's gone. You know, they do an overhaul on it. And then like a few weeks later, an article from, I want to say Deadspin, basically just blasted Whitlock, and a recording came out basically saying that, you know, I'm in charge of this, I'm in charge of that. And he said this in a meeting with The Undefeated. The issue that Whitlock has done from that is, and it's on him, but he's so vindictive and getting revenge on ESPN because they fired him like 3 times. He's like Billy Martin. Actually, he's like an uncool version of Billy Martin. You fire him and you're just like, then why'd you fire him 2, 3 other times? But Whitlock has gone on this vindictive, if you don't like me, well, fuck you. And yeah, it's sad because he's basically become the Uncle Ruckus of sports media. And it's difficult. It's depressing to watch because he is a very talented writer. But the thing is that he always had this, well, you know, pull your pants up, you know, put a belt on, you know, quit sagging type of vibe. But he's embraced this whole, well, the mainstream doesn't like me, which is funny because he's essentially what, and I'm not trying to get political when I say this, so I apologize if I do, but it is this how conservative media outlets will say we'll blame the media when they are part of the media. He and Clay Travis have basically just kind of joined hands and trying to single-handedly bring down ESPN or bring down what they perceive as liberal sources and liberal news outlets that cover sports. And it is depressing to watch a man basically just kind of continue to piss on his career. And I mean, there's a reason why, you know, Fox basically didn't renew your contract. Like, there's a reason why you can't, and like, if you go back to NABJ, they'll look at you and kind of turn their heads. Like, there's a reason why Allen Iverson said what he said about you. even though Iverson didn't say his name, everybody instantly knew who it was.
That was funny because I was like, wait a second.
That was fantastic.
I didn't even remember Whitlock having some kind of.
Yeah, I didn't either.
I mean, obviously, there are obvious reasons why Whitlock might like turn up his nose at Allen Iverson and say some reprehensible stuff. But like, I was like, is he talking about like Kent Babb? Who is he talking about? And right. Look, in the late 90s and mid 2000s, if you were a sports writer and did not have a scalding hot Allen Iverson is ruining the game take, you know, it was hard to get a press pass. Like, everyone did that. It was dumb, and it was reductive, and it was often, like, heavily influenced by racial overtones, but, like, that's the thing. Like, everyone did that, so it was like, oh, really? Like, Whitlock kept that up? Huh. Fascinating. Unsurprising. Go ahead, man. Sorry to cut you off.
Oh, no, you're good. No, but, and, you know, with all of this stuff going on now, you know, you have, you know, racial, you know, unjust, and, you know, Whitlock knows that his conservative audience is, and for some reason, I don't get what it is, but it's like when black analysts will go to Fox Sports, which are supposed to be separate from Fox News, they become all of a sudden become conservative, and it's super weird because Marcellus Wiley, who was an advocate for Colin Kaepernick,
yes,
when like, he was at Colin, ESPN, like,
Marcellus Wiley's turn to conservative. I've been stunned by that. I was like, really,
Marcellus Wiley? Right. And it's this, and it's this strange, like, well, let me white-splain to the black audience why this is good or bad. Like, let me white-splain my point. And Whitlock has taken that, and he'll basically say, well, yeah, no. Like, this is not how you do this. This is not – and it is frustrating to watch. And it's actually depressing to watch because it's like, dude, if – like, once you retire and once you look back at your career, you're probably going to say – oh, yeah, you know, I did this, I did that. But you can say all your accomplishments, but the way that you treated a Katie Nolan, the way that you treated a Maria Taylor, the way that, you know, ex-athletes are basically gladly shitting on you for things that you've said, I wouldn't want that on my conscience. Like, that would be difficult to go to bed at night knowing that people openly, and I'm not saying that, you know, as a writer, you got to kiss up to every athlete, you know, you critique them fairly, but I couldn't go to bed at night knowing that I've burned so many bridges. And when I walk out the door, I'm arguably the most hated sports writer in America.
Yeah, it's really, really sad. And I go back and forth on this, and I don't even know if I wanted to mention him by name on this podcast, but it's like, I it depends on like how you view America right now. It like how cynical you want to be. And I don't know. Do you think this is ultimately where like he's just a thing of the past 5 years from now, or this expands his brand? Because I don't know. I go
he's
back.
He's gonna be Andy Rooney. And the thing is, I actually kind of like Andy Rooney. Andy Rooney used to crack me up. Yeah, I was at you know, that preteen that was watching 60 Minutes, because I was like, oh, why my parents still have CBS on after the NFL? And like, Andy Rooney would be like the whiny old man, but it was kind of endearing, but you also realize he's kind of a crotchety old man. The issue with Whitlock is he's burned so many bridges that like 5 years from now, and he's already doing it, he's basically just going to shit on anything that people actually like. Like, there was no reason to go after Katie Nolan the way he did.
But there, like, is there was an no argument.
Call like, has been forwarded to an automated voice messaging
Bob.
System.
I think there is a way to have a conversation about Katie Nolan. Where, like, if you want to do some sort of constructive criticism about the style or something, like, I think she's successful and I think she's very good at what she does. But if you were to say that, like, this is not my cup of tea, and, like, phrase it in not a gross, horrible manner and just be fair and objective, then that's okay. But the way he did it was clearly just trying. I mean, it's just very childish of like, don't come at me in these streets. And the way they're framing it, and then celebrating having to, like, her having to go private on Twitter because of the harassment that he was sending towards her?
That part pissed me off.
Like that part is just
bad. I don't even follow Katie Nolan. She's one of those people on Twitter that's like everybody ends up retweeting her and sharing her stuff that I'm like, well, there's no point in following you. I mean, no offense, but I'm like, I'm going to see you on the timeline anyway. But yeah, like the fact that she had to go private and like all those OutKick idiots were celebrating it. That is uncomfortable. like that is like, imagine if that was your sister or, imagine if that was, say that's like one of your homegirls or even your girlfriend
right.
who is into sports and has a following. And the fact that people like actually get on there because once you know sports, when the whole thing with Maria Taylor and Doug Gottlieb went down, it further pushes my point about what the modern old white guy, no offense, Bob, if you're still on.
Bob will be back momentarily. He is charging his phone. Yes.
Gotcha. But it's the momentarily, it's that moment where you have a woman in sports and a woman who has one who has access and who has talent, because that's mainly what Doug Gottlieb was. And this, I still say that this is the reason why Doug did what he did is Doug and a lot of these old white guys are jealous of women of color, men of color and women in general, of the platform and the access. And I equated it to when Carrie Champion and Jemele Hill were both at ESPN, I would constantly see them, tweeting out stuff, tweeting out their videos, tweeting out, SportsCenter hits, and all these men would just – and this isn't even white guys. This is black, Asian, all these dudes saying, you don't know nothing about sports. And it's just like – are you saying that because she's at ESPN and she has the access and the platform? Because, yeah, there might be somebody else that's more talented, but I don't see you attacking them the way you do. And there is something about the access and the platform that they have to say whatever they want, and they're encouraged to, that it rubs these old school Gen X and boomer white dudes, it rubs them the wrong way so much. And it's so grade school like, and it's so annoying to watch because
call
it's like,
has been forwarded to an automated voice messaging.
Thanks, Bob.
It's funny. He just told me to call back. Classic Bob.
Awesome. Yeah. But no, it's annoying. And so it's like kind of grade school. And you're just like, this is so stupid. Guys, what are you doing? And they know
you're
what they're doing.
You're too old for this. Like, this is not like, okay.
Doug
like, this is just a bad way to be a human being. Like, it's just, it's so frustrating because there is a, I don't know. Like, all of it's terrible and I hate seeing it on the timeline. But my biggest concern is that if you look at the response, there is a huge subsection of our culture that is like, yeah. Go do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Katie Nolan sucks. Yeah. Maria Taylor. Like, and it's just, that is when it gets gross and awful. And that's terrible because he is feeding to the worst poor. Like, I don't want to say the whole deplorable thing, but it's just like, you're preying on certain people's worst instincts here. And they're like, you'll see that shared. I guarantee you, people in my family read that and were like, yeah. And it's just that kind of stuff is just garbage, especially if like you saw yourself as like the guy who was going to lead the undefeated. And then to just put this kind of stuff out there and to just throw away, speaking to what you said at the beginning of just like throw away your entire career for this nonsense. It's just disgusting and horrible. Like, it sucks that we cannot have these normal conversations and that like it was just a attack piece. Like that was not a, hey, is this good? like, if you want to honestly look at, I mean, we've seen this all across the board with different sports shows. Like, remember when Bill Simmons had his TV show? We were all like, this is just not good. It's not working. It didn't work. But that doesn't mean you have to come out.
I completely forgot Bill Simmons had a TV show.
Exactly. But if you want to talk about Katie Nolan's late night, Katie Nolan ESPN Plus app, her show, if you want to talk about, like, hey, is this working? Or is this something that lasts 10 years from now? Does she have to evolve or whatever? Like, that is a fair conversation to have. And you can do it professionally and objectively and not from a place where it's just attacking. If you want to talk about, didn't Maria Taylor like leave off Anthony Davis of all of her first, second, and third team NBA, all NBA?
Yeah, and
you can have a conversation about that. Well, like, there's a way to do it.
And she legitimately admitted that it was a mistake. Like, yeah. it was a mistake. Like, she openly admitted to it, and then it was like, wait a minute, what? Wait. We're really complaining. And the thing is, she didn't even have the worst ballot.
Yeah.
Like, there were people who – there was a guy who put Andre Drummond on NBA second team. I think that's what it was. And you're like, wait a minute. What? But, you know, it's – and as much as I – respect some of the work that Laker beat writers and Laker-centric media do. Them being all in on LeBron being MVP was like Laker propaganda, which was bullshit. But like watching the ballots go public and seeing all the Laker beat writers and ESPN-based media in LA all vote LeBron James, I thought that was kind of funny. And it goes back to having that access, so to speak. Part of it is, and not all of it is, but part of it's like, well, if I still want to kind of get in good graces or stay in good graces with LeBron, I'm going to have to at least vote him MVP, which some of that might be valid. I mean, some of that, you know, might be more, okay, yeah, he really carried this team. And he did have a legitimate MVP argument. I just thought the dynamics of him getting all the LA-based votes or majority of the LA-based votes was pretty hilarious. But yeah, Maria openly admitted to making a mistake.
And then, well, I mean, it was funny because. But there is a way to talk about it where you're like, hey, what happened here? Like, this is. But people are looking for. It's like they're. One of my biggest concerns here is like, when you're Maria Taylor or you're Katie Nolan, like when you put yourself out there like that and there are people looking for reasons to discredit
every single fuck up. Yes. They are looking for every single reason for you to find a way to screw up. And, you know, the fact that, you know, Maria was like, yeah, like it was a simple mistake. And even joked around saying, yeah, just go ahead and take my ballot. And it's like, Maria, it's okay. Like nobody is faulting you. Like, it had she doubled down and given all these cockamamie reasons as to why, then I would sit there and go, okay, Maria, I love you, but this was no. The thing that did kill me about this though is that Laker fanboys, and even if you defended Maria Taylor, like they hopped into my mentions and were so upset that Anthony Davis wasn't selected to one of the three teams. I'm like, and once again, this goes back to sports, and like you and I, we both love sports. And Bob, who is not here, but you know, he loves sports. But there is a subsection of our current sports culture that I want them just to take a breath, go outside, walk around.
It's not that serious.
Find a hobby, because it's not that serious. Like, it's if you're so moved to typing up something on your phone or on a computer and you're saying, oh, were you? We do this all the time, but thing is, we actually get paid and we actually understand some of the logic behind these things. But if you aren't getting paid and it doesn't affect you personally, like people are taking a personal slight that people like me and many others were actually like, it's okay. Like it's is Anthony Davis's all NBA bonus going to them? No, it's not. Anthony Davis probably doesn't even know them.
I have a way
Anthony
to solve Davis all this. Just give Zach Lowe the complete autonomy to do all of this. Just let Zach Lowe pick first, second, third team all NBA. Then we're all good.
Hi, guys.
Bob's back.
Hi. All right. I don't know why my phone isn't charging. This sucks. I hate it.
I'm in the camp of if you're going to do like all whatever, this is what you, and to me, this is what you, how you should do it. You should do it like the NHL does with the Rocket Richard Award, or no, it's the Ted Lindsay Award. Let the players decide. Let the players decide the All-Star games. Let, and this isn't all awards in sports.
Yeah, but
or
then,
at least
Carmelo Anthony would keep winning, be named all NBA teams and shit like that.
He would.
Yeah. Well, all right, let's get back. Let's get back on the show because suddenly it's like 2:15 and I'm late on everything. Sorry, and this is entirely my fault. I suck. Yeah.
Last thing.
Are we recording?
The last topic. No, we are still going. We have been going. Me and Andrew have been going and been like,
oh, okay.
Bob just was out on us and he doesn't love us anymore. And we were just going through it. The last
thing. He was talking to Whitlock.
Yeah.
Oh, do you want to hear my Whitlock take? I'll keep it brief.
Yes.
All right. I mean, here, the funniest thing to me about that we've learned about Jason Whitlock in recent years is that according to the Washington Post, he paid $500,000 for equity in Outkick.com. That to me is hilarious. Like, in order to be able to get off these really, and I cannot stress this enough, deranged takes that he posts on a daily basis, he paid $500,000 for a stake in Outkick. And like, the weird thing is, like, it's just at this point, like, you know, granted, I have reported on Jason Whitlock and written about Outkick on multiple occasions. And it's one of those moments where I'm like, is it worth even paying attention to this troll? Because he really does. Oh, it is such a shameless ploy for attention. I don't know to what degree he believes any of this. I don't even, if he doesn't,
like either way, it's still awful. Even if he does believe it or if he doesn't, either way, it's shameful and just absolute bullshit.
Bob.
Yeah, he was a good, to Andrew's point 8 years ago, he was a good columnist at the Kansas City Star. Like, those were solid columns. Like, the prose was not dazzling. The insights were not superhumanly profound or anything like that, but they were solid sports columnist stuff. Like, there is absolute, like, you could read that and think, yeah, that's good, or yeah, I don't know if I agree with that, but okay, made his point. The things he's doing now are so far removed from that, it boggles the mind. And my favorite part of all this is, like, you know, for all of his very, very, very strange respectability politics and very weird talk about the sexual pathologies of people who are of mixed race, like, you know, backgrounds and things like that, it's like when he sits down now to write a sports qua sports article, like he does this now, he'll write like once a week, I think, just here are some 10 things I think about the NFL games this weekend. And really, it is to my eternal shame that I'm aware of this at all and read it. But they're so bad. It's when you ask him now to stick to sports, it's like, Tom Brady was better this week, but the real credit goes to Tampa Bay's defense.
Mm.
And anything else, man? You covered a football team locally. You've been watching the end of, like, that's it? That's all you, anything? Like, Russell Wilson is the MVP after 2 weeks. And maybe Aaron Rodgers will be better, but right now the race is over and it's Russell Wilson.
God.
Okay.
Very profound.
They are just like, if you saw them on if you saw it as a fan post on some, you know, like team message board, you would roll your eyes and walk away and be like, okay, buddy, thanks for that. Thanks for eating all that tape and regurgitating that information. It's like, that's the laughable thing to me, is like, the dude, like, not like I have never been the kind of reporter who's like, okay, I'm going to break down how they're beating a cover two defense in here and why, like, the pre-snap reads are affecting, like, the middle linebackers' inability to keep up with the tight end. It's like, I can't do that. There are people who are very good at that. And I read those blogs because I like to know these things. But for someone who spends so much of his time howling about the politicization of sports and how, like, putting Black Lives Matter on the court is ruining the game, when he tries to just go for the hot sport, like, just to write about the field he ostensibly covers, it is so laughably bad. It really almost brings a smile to my face. So, like, you know, as opposed to, like, the pathologizing of what happened to him, I don't know, man. It's really, to be honest, if he weren't such a vindictive bastard, I think it would be, you could see pity in it. I think there is a way to have empathy for what one person has become, who really did lose. He lost his way. If you want to again get into Whitlockology, it's because, like, he got to go on Oprah when he blamed the Rutgers basketball team after Don Imus said some dumb racist stuff on air. Like, he got on Oprah. He got on cable networks. He was made famous by that. There are people for whom fame is a bad thing, and fame does not make their lives in any way better, you know, bank account size notwithstanding. And if I was going to armchair psychoanalyze Jason Whitlock, I think that would be my answer, that that level of notoriety really curdled something profound. And it is kind of sad. Like, the dude could have been a very, very cromulent sports columnist for the entirety of his career. But
I think that's over.
Yeah, I think that's long gone. If you want to read his weekly NFL takes,
I'd rather not.
I don't want to encourage this kind of behavior, but if you're curious, you'll see what I'm talking about.
I'm good. Like, thanks.
If you feel the need for a hate read or something like that, or if
who's y'all's favorite hate read? This is interesting. Like, for favorite hate read article, who is it for both of you?
Favorite hate read. I don't have hate read articles. I have hate subject matter. Like, I will get obsessed with really weird, vile things. Years ago, I won't say who, but I was about 5 years ago, I was working on a long profile of a very prominent individual who has since been canceled, who was a popular far right, I don't know what, a provocateur, let's call this person.
I think I know who it is, but go ahead.
Let's keep it on the down low for now. But I spent about 6 hours interviewing this person. I spent a lot of time talking to this person. I read every single thing, I think, or as much as I could stomach, as this person had published on the internet. I read voluminous. I was fascinated by this person in a, oh my God, this is vile kind of way. And this was, again, like, I started working on the story in, like, August, September of 2015. And so, you know, the campaign had just kicked underway, but, you know, Huffington Post was still shoving coverage of the Trump campaign to the entertainment section. Lol, owned. Good job, guys. And you know, it was still sort of seen as this weird sideshow that would collapse upon its own weight soon enough. But there was a post-Gamergate ascendant far right, and this was interesting to me. So I read so much vile stuff, and I spoke with people who this person had covered. I got really paranoid because every single interview subject told me that I was going to be doxxed once the story was published, and that I had to lock down every scrap of information I had online, and that you should inform my local police station about a possible swatting that might occur. I did all these things. Yeah. And I wrote a long profile. I wrote a long thing. I got it. I filed a draft to an editor. Spent a lot of time on this story, and it ended up getting killed for reasons that are not entirely clear to me, and that's okay, because I'd like to think that the things I framed this person's ascendancy was profound and insightful and good. Whatever the case may be, it still wouldn't have mattered, because it's still it would not have done anything to impact this person's increasing popularity. It would, but I sometimes get fascinated by horrible subject matters, and I start consuming them way too much, ostensibly as research for a story, but not always, if I'm being completely honest. There's another person who I'm doing some research on right now, who is a very popular YouTube pundit, and I have watched, let's call it, a lot of their content. So given the addictive nature of my personality, I would say that it's not people as much as when I find a subject that I find fascinating and yet repulsive, I'm unable to sometimes stop learning more. That might be bad.
Andrew,
that might be a thing I should not do.
I don't really necessarily have any hate reads. There's nobody that I'm just let me see what shit they're saying now. I don't have anything like that. The one thing that I can't stand is hot takes that shouldn't be hot takes, but then they become blown out of proportion. And I don't care if it's a long read. I don't care if it's a 200 to 400 word read. If you're blowing something out of proportion, and if you're wasting time on something that is probably going to go away within a day or two, I've always had this philosophy on sports, and maybe this is why, maybe this is why I feel like I'm kind of like a dinosaur in this industry. Not every reaction needs a reaction. You don't need to.
What?
Oh,
I know, right?
Can I just say the emergency pod stuff? I hate with a daunting passion.
Here's my thing. It better be either a coach firing. It better be a team melting down. If you're gonna have an emergency pod, it better be for something that's going to, that's changing things. If it is a
sports are shut down because of COVID, sure, do an emergency pod. But yeah, if you do an emergency pod, Chip Kelly fired from UCLA, I'm going to hate you.
I will say, if it is immediate reactions, and the immediate reactions take, are more than, 30 minutes, you better have a damn good reason as to why your emergency pod is lasting more than 30 minutes. It should be, okay, this happened, so-and-so, did this or whatever. You better give me a good reason to listen. And honestly, I don't mind the emergency pods, but if you are creating drama just to create drama, and if you are creating controversy and hot takes just to have a hot take, and that's another thing I hate about sports media. Guys, if you're going to have a hot take, let it be original, or don't regurgitate what
don't call
you
it a hot take. Don't call it a take. Just have it a just do the research and come up with your own opinion and think about it and just put it out there and see what happens. Don't go into it like, ooh, what is the juiciest thing I can pull from this thing? That should not be your mindset ever. I'm fired up.
I feel like
we need to
teach a class for young journalists. Like, this is what you think is cool. Like, you're going to hate in 5 years. Like, and just get it out of your system now. Because if you think your hot take is going to somehow shift the dynamic, it's not. It's, I mean, you might lose some followers. You might piss some people off, but nobody cares. I think that's why I have so few followers now, because people just know that I don't do hot takes. I don't do hot takes, and if I do a hot take, it's gonna piss everybody off. So I don't know.
I mean, it's. I wonder if, like, you know, look, there was a whole sports journalism industry built around the hot take merchant, like the Skip Bayless thing of sports media, and like that was. You know, just to go back to sort of Whitlock, like it used to be that a newspaper would kids re-Google newspaper and it'll tell you about it. It used to be that a newspaper would like have a columnist. A columnist would include opinions in their coverage, and that was like all you could get. And then like the internet spawned an entire sort of take-based industry online, and I'm wondering if that's kind of dwindling out. Because honestly, like I don't even. Maybe I'm just, you know, reading different things, and so I don't notice it, that it's still there and it's still incredibly, you know, and still incredibly important part of, like, sites' coverage. But there just aren't that many freaking sports sites left anymore.
Like, I think it is dwindling. I would agree. I think it's dwindling, and people are real. And the thing about COVID and whether it's a curse and a blessing is that there are places and there are outlets who made their money off of clicks and made their money off of all of these things happening. Well, what happens when there's no games?
There's no ad revenue anymore. There's no There's nothing.
Yeah, and there's no, I can't watch a Pistons Kings game, give you a gallery of takes on slides. I can't do that anymore because there's no games. Like, I can't give you a hot take or immediate reactions. Like, sometimes the immediate reaction is, okay, it was another game. This game does not mean anything in the abstract. So there's really no the reaction is no reaction. But, you know, of course, everybody needs a reaction to something. And so, yeah, no. COVID, for better or worse, has definitely changed the dynamic.
Mainly worse.
Mainly worse, but for some places, it really showed that your takes aren't needed. Like, your takes every day are not needed.
None of it is needed. None of it is needed. Like, no one, like, the men scream, like you know, afternoon TV programming of mainly men screaming about sports. It's just been revealed as so vapid and empty and like kind of sad.
Not that everybody didn't know this already, but it's like it took everybody watching it to realize this stuff kind of sucks. Yes, welcome to 2010. It was shit then and it's shit now.
I think that's how we should wrap. It was shit then and it was shit now. This is a really happy pod. This is a really happy get into this Friday. You know, I'm sorry in advance, folks, if you were looking for a happier start to your weekend, but we're being real on this podcast. It's hot takes
for
the full hour. We're going hard at sports media.
All right.
Bob, what can we read from you this week in the Daily Beast?
I don't have anything new this week. I'm working on a bunch of different stories that hopefully will come soon. But for now, just, you know, if you check out
my Twitter feed, Bob Sayed. I'm sure I'll post about it. I do like posting. I'm often posting.
You're always online. I like that.
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah.
Andrew, what can we read from you and check out on the pod this week?
Read nothing from me because basically it's nothing. I mean, like there's no... Nothing really new, Andrew.
Yeah, hold on.
Nothing really new or interesting, but I do have the part one of our BCS series. I'm interviewing Jack Crosby from CBSSports.com. He's the college football editor there. So we're going to talk the early years and early stages of the BCS. So that'll be fun. That comes out on Monday.
All right. Keep up the great work, sir. And guys, always a pleasure. Love talking sports ball with you on Fridays. So we'll be back again soon. Tennessee plays tomorrow, so I will be first game day in Knoxville as a student. It's gonna be cool. I'm excited.
Nice. Go Vols.
Go Vols. There we go. I like it. That is how we wrap up here. Thank you as always, good sirs, and we will talk again soon. All right, that'll do it for today's episode of the Chase Thomas Podcast. Hope you loved it. And if you did, guess what you should do? You know what I'm going to say. Leave 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Leave a nice 5-star rating. That's all I ask. Leave a review. Tell people who are not listening to the show or come across it on Apple or wherever they get their podcast why they should listen to the best independent sports podcast today, hosted by the best in the world at what he does. Chase Thomas. I think that's me. Yeah, I'm the aforementioned Chase Thomas. So go do that today. I appreciate it. Go check out chasethomaspodcast.com/page-11, where you'll get all of my writing. Yeah, writing every single day. Please go check that out. Just check out the website as a whole. Go to the Patreon. You can support us there at patreon.com/chasethomaswriter. Yeah, I appreciate the support as always. I don't think I said enough in this new closing, but if I did not, please keep listening to the podcast. I greatly appreciate it as we continue to grow and become the number one sports podcast in the world. Thank you as always, and you'll be back with another episode very soon. Thank you, guys.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast, hell yeah.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a 4-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.